Good evening. Hello and welcome. We just have a few folks on our call right now, but to those of you who dialed in early, I want to thank you so much for being prompt. I want to welcome everyone to this live telephone town hall meeting we have for you this evening. This evening's forum will give you an opportunity to learn more about what ASEA and Ask Me Local 52 does on your behalf. As you listen this evening, please be thinking about questions you would like to ask during our live question and answer part of this forum. We'll start with an overview from the Executive Director of ASEA, Jake Metcalf. During the call, we'll also ask you to vote in different polls to gauge your feelings around the budget and other important issues. If you already have a question to submit on issues like outsourcing, state spending, new revenue, etc., you can do so by pressing 0 on the phone right now or at any time throughout the forum. Again, later you'll have that opportunity to ask that question live, but if you'd rather not go live, that's fine. Still press 0. Just let your operator know you'd rather not go live, and I'd be happy to read your question over the air. Finally, if you'd like to get email updates from ASEA Ask Me Local 52 moving forward, please press 7 on the keypad on your phone to provide us with your email address. We'll send you occasional email updates on issues affecting ASEA members. So again, that is 0 to get in line with that question, comment, or concern, and 7 if you'd like to provide us your email address. So I'll go through this intro maybe one more time as we are dialing out to thousands of members this evening, and we want everyone to get on the call. So if you're just joining, I want to welcome you to a very special telephone town hall meeting we have for you this evening. You are live on the line with ASEA Ask Me Local 52. This evening, we'll be discussing a lot of issues. So if you have any questions, please don't hesitate to press 0 on the keypad on your phone. You can do that throughout the forum. Also, if you'd like to provide us your email address, please do that by pressing 7 on the keypad on your phone. In just a moment, we'll start with an overview from the Executive Director of ASEA, Jake Metcalf. So last time here, I'm going to tell everyone that you can get in line by pressing 0 on the keypad on your phone to get in line with that question, comment, or concern, or you can press 7 to provide us your email address, and we will send you occasional updates about issues affecting you, our ASEA members. So I want to thank you in advance for your participation this evening, and it's now my pleasure to turn this over to Jake Metcalf to get us started. Please take it away, Jake.
Thank you, Allison. Thank you, everyone, for taking the time tonight to take part in this special member teletown hall. I want to acknowledge and thank our special guest, Senator Natasha von Imhoff, for also taking the time to join us tonight. I want to give everyone a quick overview of the call. You'll hear from a few different voices tonight. Mine, our moderator, Allison, and our special guest, Senator von Imhoff. I want to be respectful of your time this evening, and I appreciate everyone for taking time out of your Thursday evening to participate in this important discussion. The call will include three main parts: my presentation, which I'm about to begin, Senator von Imhoff's presentation, and a question and answer session at the end. As Allison mentioned, you can press 0 at any time to ask your question. Throughout the call, Allison will also help us conduct a couple of polls to gauge your thoughts. In fact, let's do a poll right now and see who's on the call with us. Allison?
Excellent. Thank you so much, Jake. Yes, we have a series of poll questions this evening. You will vote on all of them simply by pressing the button on the keypad on your phone. So I'll go through this question twice. This one has just two answers. Simply, we want to know, are you a state GDU employee or a city employee of Sitka or Fairbanks North Star Borough? So please press 1 on the keypad on your phone if you are a state employee, and please press 2 if you work for the city of Sitka or FNSB. So again, very simply, we just want to know who we're talking to tonight. Are you a state employee? Please press 1. And if you work for the city of Sitka or FNSB, please press 2. All right, while they weigh in on that, I'm going to turn this back to you, Jake.
Thanks, Allison. Some of our members don't know that ASEA also represents Sitka and the Fairbanks North Star Borough employees. These are city employees, so it may seem like the state budget may be less direct for them, but they are impacted by revenue sharing and other cost shifting factors. It looks like we have a lot of state employees online, and so I want to thank you all for joining. I'm going to dive right in. This is the first time we've used this service, and we're excited to have the opportunity to connect with our members across the state this way. All of our ASEA AFSCME members provide vital services that all Alaskans depend on every day. Over the last several years, we've seen some huge hits to the budget, which impact these public services that we provide. The interruptions hurt the public and the communities we serve. We know that efficient and high-functioning government requires committed and dedicated state employees to get the job done. ASEA AFSCME members do just that. You go above and beyond to deliver these services. Many of you perform difficult and challenging tasks that are thankless but critical in keeping the state running. With that, I want to share with you our key positions going into this legislative session. We know the governor submitted a basically status quo budget. And so we've responded with two primary priorities that we'll be sharing with legislators next week at the AFL-CIO legislative fly-in. Our first priority is protecting state services by opposing any additional cuts. And our second priority is to protect state jobs and make sure that Alaskans are able to continue to deliver services to Alaskans. In other words, we're opposed to outsourcing Alaska jobs, including the outsourcing of prisoners, which we learned earlier this afternoon that the governor and his administration are no longer considering doing. That's great news. We believe that critical public services should not be driven by making profits. Many studies and real-life examples have shown us that the public in our communities are not best served when the public services are taken over by for-profit businesses. As many of you know, we are still in litigation on this issue with the Alaska Psychiatric Institute, or API, and the WellPath Corporation. Let me give you a quick update on that. We've asked for an injunction and an order that the state comply with our collective bargaining agreement, and we want to make sure that the proper feasibility study is done to look at whether privatizing makes sense there. And we expect to hear back from the judge at any time on the status of that case. We also plan to correct some bad information the Dunleavy administration has put out in their 10-year budget plan that, quote, mid-career GGU employees' wages outpace inflation by a staggering amount. That is untrue. The truth is that Anchorage State GGU employees on average make $27,000 less per year in salary than federal government employees in Anchorage. Furthermore, GGU employees make on average $4,000 less per year than employees at the municipality of Anchorage. This information is shared with us from the nonpartisan Anchorage Economic Development Corporation. Think about that for a minute. On average, a federal government employee in Anchorage makes 50% more per year in salary than a state employee. That's not right, and it's not fair that you are clearly not paid a staggering amount in comparison to your fellow government employees. When we're in Juneau, we're also going to discuss with other union members the importance of our plan for pushing back against further cuts and outsourcing. Our ability to successfully push back against cuts and outsourcing jobs and services lies in you, our members. Collectively, we have over 8,000 members. Our members and our solidarity on issues makes us a powerful machine. Because you are union members and citizens, you have the right, freedom, and protections to voice your concerns and thoughts about policies and this administration. You just have to make sure you do so on your own time. You can testify, write your legislators, and share your story about making Alaska and Alaska state services best for everyone. Right now, ASEA is collecting member stories. We want to know what you do and how you help Alaska. If you're interested in sharing your story, press the number 9. We will be embarking on a greater public education campaign to make sure that the public are aware of the faces and people that safeguard our water, manage our natural resources, clear our roads, inspect our bridges, and plan for the transportation of tomorrow. We also shelter Alaska's children, connect families to vital services, fight fires, protect property, take emergency calls, and dispatch public safety officers. We are telling these stories to share that this is the Alaska we want to live in, one that we can provide critical state services to without interruption and keep our communities and state moving forward and economically healthy. With that, I'm going to turn it over to Allison real quick to get a sense of how you feel about the governor's proposed budget. Allison?
Excellent. Thank you so much, Jake. Yep, we have another polling question up. Thank you to everyone who participated in that first one. We had great numbers. This one has five possible answers. Please wait till you hear them all before you vote. The question goes like this. We want to know, how concerned are you about Governor Dunleavy's proposed budget? Please press 1 if you are not at all concerned. Press 2 for somewhat concerned. 3 if you're moderately concerned. 4 if you're very concerned. And 5 if you are extremely concerned. So we want to know how you're concerned about how concerned you are about the proposed budget. Press 1 for not at all concerned. Press 2 for somewhat concerned. 3 for moderately concerned. 4 for very concerned, and 5 for extremely concerned. And while everyone is weighing in on that, thank you so much. I'd like to take this time to remind you, if you'd like to get in line with your question, comment, or concern, please press 0 on the keypad on your phone. We will be getting to those questions live here in just a little bit, but if you'd rather not go live, that's fine. So press 0, just let your operator know, and I'd be happy to read that over the air. Also, want to remind everyone, if you want to provide us your email address so that we can give you occasional updates about issues pertaining to you in your inbox, please press 7. We had a little bit of a line there, but we've cleared it out. You can press 7 to provide us your email address, and that is a great way for us to keep you up to date via email. All right, and with that, I'm going to send this back over to Jake.
Thank you, Allison. Could you read the poll results?
Absolutely. Yep, thanks to everyone who weighed in. All right, so the largest number up here, we had 33% of our listening audience were extremely concerned, and honestly, it goes down from there. So our biggest group was extremely concerned, a little bit less. Biggest group, 33%, a little bit less at 28, very concerned, and 24, moderately, 9%, somewhat, and then 6%, not at all. So 33 and 6 were the big numbers there, Jake.
Thank you very much. Questions are coming in. I wanted to take a chance to shift gears here and give our guest, Senator Von Imhoff, an opportunity to give us her views on the governor's proposed budget and anything else she thinks we might see or look out for at this session. Let me introduce Senator Von Imhoff. She's a fourth-generation Alaskan and lives in Anchorage with her husband, Rudy, and their two children. She was elected to the Senate in 2016 and represents Southwest and Midtown Anchorage. Senator Von Imhoff has served on the Senate Resources and Health and Social Services Committee, as well as the Finance Committee, of which she is now the co-chair. Her office handles capital budget as well as legislation for the Senate Finance Committee. Senator, thank you again so much for taking time to be with us this evening. And please,
thank you.
Please let us know about the budget.
Yes, thank you very much for inviting me to speak with you tonight, and I really appreciate the opportunity. What I wanted to kind of say is, really with any governor, they drop their initial budget on the 15th of December, and it takes about an entire month for Ledge Finance and OMB and the legislators themselves to take the preliminary look at the budget. And the pattern is always the same, in that we spend the first 2 weeks, both the House and the Senate, inviting the Department of Natural Resources, the Department of Revenue, the Department of Tax, Division of Tax, and so forth, to all present the revenue estimates for the year, because the fall revenue forecast always comes around in December as well. Then we invite Ledge Finance to present their their interpretation of the budget, if you will. Now, the reason why I'm saying this is that every governor, when they drop their budget, that is just a starting point. And it doesn't matter whether you're Republican or whether you're a Democrat, or whether there's been large cuts or large increases, it's a starting point. And the legislators, we have 60 of us, we're all going to want to have our fingers in it. So I just want to reassure you that there's going to be plenty of opportunity over the next 3 months to weigh in many committees, both in the House and the Senate. And then we have our subcommittee process. So The session started on Tuesday, and the first issue that I wanted to let you know is that there's always a 5-day window to do veto overrides from the previous session. So if it started on Tuesday, that window ends on Saturday. We met with the House and the Senate today, and we have decided to hold a floor session, a joint floor session tomorrow at mid-morning to discuss some of the vetoes that the governor did last summer. I cannot comment on what veto overrides will be presented. That is still being discussed right now, but I wanted to let you know that's the first issue that we're doing. Senator Bert Stedman and I, we've already had Department of Revenue, Department of Natural Resources. I think we're going to have the debt presentation tomorrow. And then starting next week, we're going to have the permanent fund, which is now, by the way, 65% of the total revenue that the state received. It is no longer dominated by natural resource development. It is now actually investment income. So Angela Liddell, the CEO, will be presenting a week from tomorrow. The House has already indicated that they want to start their subcommittee process. There's 17 agencies. They'll be starting the subcommittees right away, inviting commissioners to come in to look at each of the departments. The Senate is going to follow suit probably in about 3 weeks or so. We want to give the House time to start the operating budget. That is their responsibility to start it first. There's been much discussion to get our work done quickly, somewhere between 90 and 120 days. We definitely do not have a big appetite to go well into June for a variety of reasons. Once the House subcommittee begins to start, their goal is to get a budget over to the House around mid-March. The Senate will be starting our subcommittee process. My guess is probably the second week-ish of February. So there'll be a little bit of overlap. So when the House provides us their budget, we have at least started a bit on our end. Last year, I was the chair of the Health and Social Services Subcommittee. We met 14 times. That was probably more than most other subcommittees. But the point is we take the work seriously and we meet frequently to really understand the budget. Now, during this whole time, I think that we're going to get a supplemental. My understanding is that the supplemental is going to have probably about $120 to $130 million in Medicaid funding that we owe and we must pay. I believe there's going to be some wildfire and potentially some earthquake mitigation. So we are definitely going to have to take a look at the supplemental, and we're going to have to vote on that. And it's going to be difficult because I believe we're going to have to get into the CBR, which has about $2.1 billion in it right now, to be able to fund a good portion of that between $250 and $300 million supplemental. So that's kind of the overview right now, and I will pause for any questions or direction.
Thank you, Senator. I want to respond to a little bit about what you said, but I also want to let Allison guide our members in another real quick poll, and we'll get back to you with questions after that. Allison, could you go ahead?
Absolutely. Thank you so much, Jake. Thank you, Senator. All right. We want to know, are you, our listeners, our members right now, willing to get involved? Will you write your legislators, share your member story, testify, call, or get involved in other ways this session? So this question has 5 potential answers. Please listen to them all before you vote. So again, we want to know, will you get involved? Please press 1 for yes. I plan on staying engaged and doing as much as I can to advocate for the services I provide. Please press 2 for yes. I will do at least one of those things. Press 3 for I'm not sure. I'm nervous to get too involved. Press 4 for no. I do not plan on getting involved. Press 5 for I want to stay in the loop and learn more. So again, are you willing to get involved? Will you write your legislators, share your member story, testify, call, or get involved in other ways this session? Press 1 for yes. I plan on staying engaged and doing as much as I can to advocate for the services I provide. Press 2 for yes. I will do at least one of those things. Press 3 for I'm not sure. I'm nervous to get too involved. Press 4 for no, I do not plan on getting involved. And press 5 for I want to stay in the loop and learn more. And while everyone weighs in on that, thank you for your participation. I want to do a last call for that email collection. Last call, as we are more than halfway through our event this evening. If you'd like to provide us your email address so we can keep you up to date with occasional emails, press 7 on the keypad on your phone right now, and also press 0 to get in line with your question. All right, back to you, Jake.
Thank you, Allison. I want to thank the senator again, and I also think it's time we hear from you, our members. Many of you submitted excellent questions ahead of time, and many more have submitted questions during the call. I don't think we have a time to get to all the questions, but we'll do our best to answer as many as we can. If you stay on the line after the call ends in a few minutes, you can leave a voice message with your question or any other feedback, and we'll make sure to follow up with you. Let us know if you'd like us to share or forward your comments to the senator in your message. Senator, I want to start off with a question that we got from one of our members, and it is, we have sustained many cuts over the last 5 years. I feel now that we are at a point, this is a revenue problem, not an expense problem. How will the legislature fill the shortfall for long-term sustainability, not only for workers, but for the state of Alaska?
Very good question. Last year, one of my comments at Senate Finance is that we don't have a fiscal crisis, we have a priority crisis. And that has, in fact, not really changed, because the governor's 12-15 budget has a full PFD, and it's $2 billion out of a $5 billion total revenue that is distributed as a permanent fund dividend. And that is equivalent to about 16 agencies combined. And so we're giving out a very, very large proportion of money to a payout. So when I look at the numbers, looking at all the expenses per the governor's budget, and looking at the revenue based on what Department of Revenue and Natural Resources put together, before a dividend is paid out, we have almost a $400 million surplus. So it's only when we start paying a dividend in the millions to billions of dollars that we start creating millions to billions of dollars of deficit. So I have been speaking to people that says new revenue is a good conversation, but if we take in a dollar in any form, where are we going to spend it? Are we going to spend it in education? Are we going to spend it in Department of Corrections? Are we going to spend it in public safety? Are we going to spend it in healthcare? Or are we going to spend it in the dividend? Because right now with the governor's budget, we have $1.5 billion as a deficit. And any new revenue would then, according to that budget, go straight to a dividend. So I am advocating right now that while I acknowledge, and I'm saying this on the record, that new revenue is probably inevitable, what you will not hear me is land on a particular idea for new revenue right now, because what I am focused on is finding a new sustainable calculation for the permanent fund dividend each year. And what I think is most realistic is spending about $400 to $500 million a year, which yields about a $900 to $1,100 dividend. It all depends on maybe it's up to $600 million. So you have about $1,000 dividend, which is within the 40-year average of the dividend. The program is still there. It provides the money for people who need it. It does yield a deficit. We will need new revenue to fill it if we are going to go that route. It also depends on how much we pay for capital. Right now, our capital budget is anemic, in my opinion, about $130, $140 million. I'd like to double that. Each time that we add money to capital, we do need to have additional revenue. So the problem that I have right now is putting the cart in front of the horse. I will acknowledge for the record that new revenue is probably inevitable, but I also acknowledge that I will not advocate for new revenue prior to figuring out what our expenditures are, and that includes the permanent fund dividend.
Thank you. Allison, I think you have the next question.
Absolutely, yep. We are going to go to our first live caller of the evening, which is Carl. Carl, please go ahead. You are live on the line.
Thank you, Allison. Thank you, Senator Von Imhoff, for making yourself available to us. In a recent email that you sent out to your constituents, you mentioned that one way to reduce spending growth was to look at outsourcing and automation to reduce state costs. Could you explain specific ideas you have in that arena and what affects state workers, how it would affect state workers specifically?
Yes. One of the things that I read the audits that were done on, I think, and I forgot the name of, it was Health and Social Services and Education a couple years ago. And it was a organization that had done audits for, I think, 14 states. And their motto was savings by a thousand cuts. And there were things as minutiae as putting less salt in the salt spreaders in the wintertime for the sidewalks, to outsourcing the vending machine, servicing. One of the places, so they said nothing was too small, and so they were looking at that, even at that granular level. For me, one of the things I talked about last year was outsourcing the Medicaid eligibility file processing. There was a tremendous backlog. There were presentations, both in health and social services and finance, about how there are other states that have outsourced it to do the actual file processing and then give it to the state workers at the very end to say the yes or no choices and to make the decision. To me, that sounded like a good idea. One of the other audit recommendations in 2017 were the real estate inspections out in the field, and that it might make sense in addition to, like you see, as an appraiser or even a home inspector, to outsource some of the real estate inspections in and around both the urban and rural areas. And then you get bonus points if you combine a federal inspection with a state inspection and a municipal inspection, because sometimes the report told us that the same person, or there'd be multiple inspections in one community costing a lot of money for the different entities, federal, state, and local. So those are some of the ideas. I have seen that the DMV has been successful, and I understand that there was questions about the ferry, and there's a big concern about the ferry, so I'm just going to kind of talk about that right now because that was about four or five questions that you gave me earlier. I have ridden on the ferry between Haines and Skagway. I believe that that is a private ferry that runs, I don't know if it's year-round, I just know that I rode it in the summer. There is a working group that is starting up. I think their first meeting is in mid-February, and the governor wants to have a report by, I think, September to look at all the different routes. So there's not going to be one blanket recommendation. What I'm understanding, the buzz at the Capitol is, what might we do between Homer and Seldovia? What might we do between Homer and Kodiak? Could be different with what we do between Whittier and Cordova, something of that regard. I think that they're going to look at all the different options. Some might be privatized, and this is speculation on my part, but I guess the point is that I'm interested to see what the committee comes up with. So I will, you know, the bottom line is I'm not in the day-to-day operations like you are. You have the best ideas of where we could find savings. You're the boots on the ground. You're inside the agencies. You know what is taking your time and attention away from your mission critical work. And personally, I think it's very important to empower employees to feel comfortable with the process improvement and not worry that they're going to make themselves redundant. With a 7% attrition rate, there is a lot of room for cross-training. There's a lot of room for, cross-training. I just, from when I actually ended up having a conversation with previous Governor Mitch Daniels of Indiana, he basically stated that it was the folks in the state employees that had the best ideas. And I will leave it at that.
Thank you very much for that. We're getting close to the end. And there's, if you have time, Senator, I'd like to ask one final question.
Sure.
Is that okay?
Yeah.
Okay, so here's the last question. What are we doing to address the lack of services and funding for OCS clients in the rural areas? I have a list of concerns related to the lack of financial resources and its impact on child safety and our ability to reunify children with their parents and prevent long-term permanent placements. Could you give us an idea where you see that going as far as funding for OCS?
So we addressed this not last session, but the session before. I want to say addressed it. We took the first stab. And I did work with Les Guerra and helped pass, I want to say, House Bill 151. And we added at least $6 million, I think a little bit more, to add several more employees in OCS, completely recognizing the high employee turnover, the huge, massive caseload. We also put in some regulatory measures in terms of keeping siblings together, certain steps that had to be taken to contact parents, relatives, things of that nature. So that was a pretty big bill that we passed, and preliminary feedback was that it was well received. In the bill, we did ask for annual reporting in terms of caseload per person in the different regions and how well kids are being placed. So we should be getting a report, I think, this year on that. In regards to rural Alaska, one of the things that was presented at HESS was the tribal compact agreements with the local tribal partners. I don't think there's a one-size-fits-all. I think they're going to all have to be uniquely negotiated, and I think they all might be a little bit different, and they all might work differently. And I think it's just a function of figuring out who the people are in each of these communities, start the conversation, figuring out what unique features that they have that they need, figuring out a budget. Is there partnering with the local health consortiums that can help put in some of the money as well? And we'll take it from there. The bottom line, Jake, is I agree with you that it's a big deal. We want our kids to be safe. We want them placed in safe housing. And when they visit Juneau, it's heartbreaking.
Well, thank you, Senator. And I want to thank the callers for their comments and questions. We've gone a little over our time of 6:30, so I just want to let everybody know that we appreciate the participation. And I'd like to close with reminding everybody what Senator von Imhoff said about you knowing best and what is true as far as what's going on in state government. And that's why I'd like to state that I hope you consider getting involved and get us your questions and any comments that you may have. We'd love you to stay on or leave us any other feedback you might have about the call. Our email is aseahq@afscmelocal52.org. Thank you and good night.